American Maritime Voices was created to help you speak up, show your pride, and when needed, push back. The future of maritime is in your hands, and its story needs to be told. Will you help tell it?
Welcome back to the American Maritime Podcast, powered by Big Wig Podcasts. I'm your host, Jennifer Carpenter. We are very glad to have you aboard today, and we are particularly excited to welcome as our guest, Tim Nolan, who is president and CEO of TOTE, a family-owned American transportation and logistics company. Tim, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
So TOTE is a leader in the non-contiguous trades, serving some pretty far-flung destinations, yeah. Alaska, Puerto Rico. Tell us a little bit about the services that you provide to those markets.
Sure. No. Well, first, thanks for having me today. Excited to be here to talk about TOTE and the U.S. maritime industry as a whole. The TOTE organization, we're soon to be turning on our 50th anniversary in 2 years.
Congratulations.
So exciting times. Thank you. The TOTE organization is made up of three distinct divisions. We have our maritime business, which is our core business, and this is the one that serves both Alaska and Puerto Rico. We also have a services organization that manages and operates ships for ourselves, as well as to the Maritime Administration, Military Sealift Command, and other commercial customers. The TOTE Services Group is also the organization that was awarded the Vessel Construction Management contract by the Maritime Administration in 2019, and they're building the five training ships for the State Maritime Academy. So a very exciting project that they're working on right now. And then the last of those is our TOTE, our terminals organization, where we operate the terminals in Puerto Rico and Jacksonville as well. But when you come back to the Jones Act side of the business, we have two LNG-powered ships that call from Jacksonville, Florida, down to San Juan, Puerto Rico. These are the world's first LNG-powered container ships. And in Alaska, we have two ro-ro ships that were recently converted to LNG as well. That call between Tacoma, Washington and Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow. Okay. We have a lot to talk about as we break down these different business lines. So let's kind of start big picture.
Sure.
The Jones Act, since you mentioned it. Talk about the Jones Act and how it undergirds the investments that TOTE is making.
Sure. You know, the Jones Act, what it provides us as an organization is the confidence and stability in making the investments.
Yep.
So these were significant investments that we made as a private organization into building new ships and converting existing ships. We knew that these ships will be around for the long term, and the Jones Act provides that stability. When you take a step back and look at the Jones Act and ultimately what does that provide as well to the markets, it's stability, reliability, and I look at it's a give back to the communities that we serve as well. We have a number of our own employees that live in these communities and are proud to work with us, proud to serve their communities, ensuring that goods are transported to and from their island or their state, for that matter.
Yeah, I think that is a point that is just sometimes overlooked, that Jones Act carriers really are of and from the communities that you serve.
That's exactly it. You know, the Jones Act as a whole, 650,000 folks are employed within the Jones Act community. And there's thousands in the communities that we serve. So you look at whether it's Puerto Rico, Alaska, or even Hawaii, how many folks in those communities work within the organizations or organizations that support the Jones Act carriers. You know, and it's one of those, there's pride in working for the companies because we're an important fabric of the communities we serve. We also appreciate the opportunity to give back to the communities that we serve as well.
Tell us a little bit about some of the ways that you do that.
Sure. You know, it's important for us. We're fortunate to work for owners that recognize giving back as part of who we are and part of our DNA as a company. Whether it's the dozens of charitable organizations that we support, whether it is giving back time within the communities as well. There's, as I talk about, pride with the staff that, you know, recognizes and are proud to work with the company that we support those that need the help, whether it's a book drive, whether it is organizations that support children with illnesses, whether it is sleep outs that recognize the folks that are more challenged in the communities to raise money for them. And it's our own employees that are involved in the sleeps out in Anchorage in the winter to recognize the hardships that maybe some of the homeless go through. Or book drives that provide books and education material to people that don't have them. So there's a number of different areas that we get involved in from a charitable perspective, but also in giving our time back within these charitable organizations.
Really good corporate citizens. But let's talk also about the services that you provide for hire, which are so critical. Talk about sort of what the services that you provide really mean to consumers, to residents in Puerto Rico and Alaska who don't have all the same transportation options that those of us in the contiguous 48
have.
Do.
Well, the ships are vital to each one of those markets and communities. So you look at the ships down in Puerto Rico and Alaska for that matter. So first, the ships are the most environmentally friendly ships in the world, powered by LNG, so cleaner air for the communities we serve. The ships are some of the most dynamic and versatile ships in the world. And by that, these ships carry 53-foot containers, which is pretty unique to both of these trades.
Yeah.
They can fit 40% more cargo inside their containers than your traditional 40-foot container. So the economies of scales are great in a sense of the versatility of being able to load more in a container than what they traditionally can. The reliability of the ships, whether it's Tote or the other Jones Act carriers, have week in, week out, delivering cargo to and from the islands, whether it's during a global pandemic, whether it is during a hurricane with a natural disaster, an earthquake, you can count on these ships to be there and ensure that recovery goods are in place, the needed goods just to go about your day-to-day are in place, and it's a stable service as well. And I talked about stability that Jones Act provides us, but it's stability back to the communities. Take a step back and reflect on the pandemic, where you saw congestion, whether it was within trucks, ports, railroads, ships, equipment. Look over at the Jones Act trades. There was stability and consistency in service. We're fortunate not to face the same headwinds that some of the global trades and global, let's say, supply chain had impacted.
Yeah.
So it's one thing that you look back and reflect on. It was stability, again, that was provided to the markets we serve via the Jones Act.
You know, it's such a great point. And I think those of us in the Jones Act business have been talking about stability and reliability for a long time. And it might have seemed a little academic to people until they saw empty shelves during the pandemic and realized, oh, that's a thing we cannot have. And it's not a good place to be.
So true. So true. And, you know, there's another example I look back at, probably the most proud moment that I had working in the industry, 2017. Hurricane Maria impacted and devastated Puerto Rico. When the port opened back up, the first ships coming in were those Jones Act assets. It was the U.S. Mariners, U.S.-built ships, U.S. flag vessels coming in to support the U.S. citizens. And it was Tode and the others that support the Puerto Rico market, hired on new maritime assets, hired on thousands of pieces of equipment. We're working 24/7 with our operations to ensure that product flowed back out to the communities, whether it's from FEMA, whether it was the commercial cargo. We were there to ensure that the cargo flowed for them. So very proud moment to see what the team took the responsibility and ownership that they felt they had a responsibility back to the 3 million people of Puerto Rico. So to me, probably one of the most proud moments I had in the career.
That's really good stuff.
Yeah, exciting.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks. Costs. Jones Act opponents will sometimes say, okay, that's great, but it's just so much more expensive. Is it? What are the cost differences if I'm a consumer in Puerto Rico versus Jacksonville?
There's been studies done over the years. And when you take a step back and look at it, they're comparable to what the regions are in from a cost standpoint. So they're not at a cost disadvantage, you know, whether it's their products or services that they receive. I touched on this a bit earlier. Some of the uniqueness of the Jones Act trades, the size and type of equipment that go on the ships, whether it is the 52-foot equipment with 40% more freight compared to your standard 40-foot equipment that's offered in traditional trades. This is both in Alaska and Puerto Rico. One element too, Jennifer, that's unique is when you come to the reliability, there's a just-in-time methodology that a lot of the importers will use. What this allows them to do is not carry as much inventory, not have that carrying cost. They can depend on the service to be able to deliver the fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, fresh meats, seafood to the store shelves reliably on a weekly basis or multiple times a week. So this is one they have confidence in. It provides them a quality service. And I would venture to say the service that is received on the Jones Act ships can rival any service in the world, whether it's at the terminals that we operate or on the ships that we utilize. I've never seen anything like it in my 30 years in a sense of the quality of service that the trucking community receives working with the Jones Act providers, to our customers receive from a cost-benefit standpoint. it is very unique around the world in the service.
That's fantastic. It's dedicated to Puerto Rico. I've heard the Dedicados a Puerto Rico.
That's it. Yeah. That's exactly it. These ships are, and it's both Alaska and Puerto Rico for us, are purpose-built for the trades we serve. You have the Ro-Ro vessels in Alaska. They ship military equipment back and forth. They ship heavy industrial equipment that support the oil exploration. They ship buses, tractors, 53-foot refrigerated containers to 53-foot dry containers. Very versatile assets to serve that market. Dual propellers, four engines in each one of them. There's a redundancy there to support the trade and the seas that they work in as well. You go down to Puerto Rico, these are versatile ships that can take on car racks. They can take on bulk fructose that is there to produce beverages on the island. It takes on refrigerated equipment of multiple sizes. So it's a very unique ships that are built specifically for these trades.
Really interesting stuff. Tell me a little bit about the backhaul trade. We've been talking about the stuff that goes into Puerto Rico that's so important, but I understand that Puerto Rico was also able to move products to the U.S. mainland more efficiently because of the service you provide.
That's right. The it's one that's overlooked because it is a predominant headhaul trade down to Puerto Rico. But on the northbound side, whether it's produce, whether it is beverages, whether it is finished products, pharma products that come up, this comes back to the reliability. It's at efficient cost coming back northbound, and it has the reliability that I spoke about earlier, that the shippers can count on for it to come into the States, short transit time, reliable transit time, and get to the final destination, be it a business customer or an end customer, and on the shelves in time. So it is it's a service that you touched on there that is cost efficient for them in importing into the States from the island. And there's a high-skilled workforce on the island there, whether it's manufacturing products, pharma goods, or on the agricultural side that is imported into the States on a weekly basis.
Good stuff. Hey, let's pivot to LNG for a minute, because Tote was really a leader in LNG as a propulsion technology for ships. Yeah. Tell us a little bit, why LNG? How did you choose it? And how do you see that contributing to the increasing sustainability of what is already the most sustainable mode of freight transportation?
Sure. So 2012, we made the decision to go on LNG. There's a lot of debate going on in the maritime world and around the world of how do you solve for enhanced emission requirements that are being put forward to the industry. Whether someone was looking to do scrubbers or trying to decide what that alternate fuel was, we did research and felt that LNG was the right way to go. It was a significant investment. This comes back to the Jones Act where we had stability.
Yep.
And hence the confidence to make these investments. What came out of this? Well, to this day, almost 10 years later, since we took delivery of the ships, they're still the most environmentally friendly ships out there. It is still the most abundant clean fuel out there to use within the in the trade. It is evolving fuel as well, where I don't see LNG staying at the same level it is today, whether there's future bio LNG synthetic LNG. So LNG is in transition as well to continue to evolve. Reflect back on what has it done. We look at the emission reductions in NOx, SOx, carbon emissions, particulate matters, and significantly in greenhouse gases as well. All those make it one, cleaner air for the communities that we serve, and the ships themselves are running very efficiently on the LNG. We just concluded a conversion project, which took us 5 years to do on the Alaska ships, and we converted these ships, four engines on each one of the ships while they're underway, and they've been running on LNG for the past number of months, running very well, outperforming what our expectations were. And this just is a little bit about the evolution with LNG, that the technology with the engines, the use of it as a marine fuel is really evolving.
You converted the engines while the ships were underway.
We did.
Whoa.
We did. Fortunately, you know, with the four ships in the summer seasons, we have redundancy. So we can shut an engine down, do the conversion. And we did this for all eight engines over the past few years. So it was a major feat. This goes down to recognizing the U.S. industrial base of being able to do that, being innovative, and putting practice into reality.
I am hearing so many examples that you are saying that just give the lie to one of the common wrong criticisms of the Jones Act, which is that, you know, this is a protective market in which innovation is stifled. I am hearing story after story of innovation.
Not at all. Not at all. You go on with it as well, Jennifer. You look at the bunker barges.
Tell me a little bit about that. Actually, that was where I wanted to go next. So well done.
Interesting. So the 2018, we took delivery of what is the Clean Jacksonville. It's a bunker barge based out of Jacksonville that supports our ships and supports other third-party assets today. We saw as we brought in the ships, the infrastructure wasn't there as much, but it was the U.S. shipyards that we partnered with. New design, new technology. They leaned into the innovation, understanding this was a direction that the industry was going. Since that first delivery, I want to say there's a half dozen bunker barges. So you continue to see the demand on LNG bunkering increase. This is driven by one, you look at the Jones Act, much of the Jones Act's fleet is being recapitalized as dual fuel and LNG. But you also look at the global new builds, 30% of the new builds are dual fuel LNG. What does this mean? There's going to be a greater demand on LNG bunkering requirements when those ships call here in the States. So not just the Jones Act ships, it's the ro-ros, the cruise lines, the container ships that are going to have this demand for bunkering.
Interesting stuff. Yeah. And these LNG bunker barges are getting pretty big. So to those folks who say we can't build LNG carriers in the U.S.
Hey, we've built LNG powered ships. We've built the bunker barges, you know, up to 12,000 cubic meters now. It should not be a challenge at all for us to build an LNG ship as well.
Welcome to American Maritime Voices, your place to be heard. As part of American Maritime, you are critical to moving and securing our country. And now you can help tell the story of maritime and be part of key decisions that affect it. American Maritime Voices was created to help you speak up, show your pride, and when needed, push back. It's free to become a voice, and we'll keep you informed of what's happening in Washington so you can help change the course of issues that matter most to you. As a voice, you'll get monthly updates, have access to podcasts and videos, and receive action alerts when your voice is needed most. The future of maritime is in your hands, and its story needs to be told. Will you help tell it?
On any given day in Washington, policy proposals are created, debated, and decimated by tens of thousands of people and organizations working behind the scenes. On 80 Proof Politics, a guest and I will visit a D.C. watering hole and distill the art of advocacy by pulling back the curtain a bit and taking a look at how they play their part in the sausage factory we call our federal government. So if you're at all interested in how the sausage is made, pull up a chair, grab a drink, and join us. After all, what goes better with sausage than a tall, cold one?
Faith in the news media has been challenged, making it even harder to get stories told. The Friday Reporter podcast was created to help audiences better understand the media by hosting journalists who will answer the questions to which we need answers. Join me every Friday to hear more.
Thinking about innovation, tell us a little bit about the National Security Multi-Mission Vessel that you're building for SUNY Maritime and tell us about this. There's so much cool about this project.
It is great. It's compliments to the Maritime Administration, you know, for leaning into the project. It was one they had been working on for some years. They had a vision of bringing the public and private sector together, and their goal was utilizing the private sector and their best practices to help them deliver ships that could support the maritime academies. And they were successful in doing it with the first ship being delivered to SUNY. Exciting ships. The ships can house over 600 cadets. The ships have, you know, in the time of a need by the country, be it a hurricane or some other, you know, unfortunate incident, it can fit over 60 containers. It has ro-ro access onto the ships. It has a full medical outfit on the ships as well. They have full training facilities for the bridge. They have redundancies from an engine standpoint for the engine cadets to learn on as well. It is an extremely exciting time. It's great to see the country reinvest into the maritime industry. We're a maritime nation. This has not been done in decades, long overdue. Compliments to MARAD, compliments to Philly Shipyard. Proud of our team at Towed Services for leading the VCM as well.
That is fantastic. Yeah, it is great to see the congressional support, the administration support, the private sector step up, because this really gets at all three pillars of the
job.
You know, I'm hearing shipyards, I'm hearing vessels, and I'm hearing the next generation of mariners.
That's right. It hits every one of those areas. And, you know, it's great to go to the Philly Shipyard, 1,500 folks building those ships from the local communities, which is fantastic. you look at the Mariners and the university. I was talking to Admiral Futis yesterday. He was noting that he had some of the prospective students coming on campus for tours, and they saw the Empire State, you know, tied up, and their eyes just were wide open, and the excitement that it drew. So it is great from a recruitment standpoint for folks coming to the universities, and it's going to be that much better in, you know, utilizing the assets to train them so we have that next generation of Mariners prepared to support.
Tim, tell us a little bit about this vessel construction manager model that seems to have been used so successfully in the Empire State.
No, by all means. So, you know, we were fortunate to be awarded the Vessel Construction Management Initiative by MARAD in 2019. And this is one where the vision for MARAD was using basically a public-private partnership to come together, utilize the best practices from the private sector to ensure we had the efficiencies put in place to deliver a vessel on time, on budget, and at the quality and expectations that were set forth with the vision. And that's coming into play. You know, I think it's important to take a step back, Jennifer, and recognize the folks that really made this happen. You know, I give big compliments to the Maritime Administration for having the vision to put this in place, partnering with the private sector, with the folks that have built ships and have been successful in doing that to support their own businesses. I also give a big recognition to Congress. It was a bipartisan support for the Vessel Construction Management Initiative and program. And without that, we wouldn't be here today. So truly appreciate from the vision from MARAD, the support from Congress, and I'd also like to recognize Philly Shipyard. Over the 1,500 employees that they have working in the yard, building these ships, this is just a fine example of what the Jones Act and the U.S. shipping industry is all about, building these cutting-edge assets that are going to be core to training the next generation of Mariners. Exciting program to be a part of, and look forward to what the future holds with the vessel construction concept and how it can be applied to other government agencies with this public-private partnership.
It's really exciting stuff. The congressional leadership, the leadership from the administration and MARAD, and then the private sector know-how on the part of companies like Tote and Philly Shipyard, just a really good marriage there.
It really is. And the result is the Empire State and the four vessels to follow. So exciting times and you know, again, compliments to the administration.
Fantastic. Well, on that theme of looking ahead, as we start to wrap up here, you know, kind of look out into the future. Where do you see the evolution of the industry? What are you energized about? What are you concerned about that we need to get a handle on?
Well, great question. And exciting times. One that we're in now and where we're going. You look at the importance of Jones Act. You look at the importance of the U.S. maritime industry. Take a step back and look what's going on from a security standpoint around the globe, whether it's in Ukraine, whether it's in Israel, whether they're present in the Pacific with China. There's no more important time than now for us to ensure that the U.S. maritime industry is strong, we're reinvesting, and we're partnered with the government as well to be prepared in those times of need. So from that context, I think it's something that we need to focus in on. I think it's one that you need to continue to look at programs like the Tanker Security Program that was implemented, the MSPs of the world. I think an opportunity to recapitalize on the sealift programs lie ahead of us as well. All this is in support of national security. All this comes back to the Jones Act and the importance it has to the country. This comes back into the industrial base, ensuring that we're giving the right support to the yards, that they have what they need to be able to build successfully, and they have the orders coming in to keep the labor supported with those opportunities. The next element is the Mariner front. I think we have some of the best and brightest in the world. Very proud to partner with the labor organizations we have. It's one that we need to continue to ensure we're reinvested into those places, such as delivering these ships, such as attracting folks to come in and understand they have an opportunity to make a great living, to see parts of the world that they would never have seen before. So it's continuing to reinvest into Mariners. And the other element is, you know, where we are today with the fuel technology is not going to be where we're going to be 5, 10, 20 years from now.
Yeah.
We've got to stay in front of it as a country, as an industry, continue to reinvest, continue to research, continue to innovate, just like we did with recapitalizing the fleet, not just Tote, but in general, from an LNG perspective. So you look at technology, you look at the security aspects of things, you look at recapitalizing fleets, you look at reinvesting into our Mariner base. These are core things that you see going, taking place into the future. Very excited about what lies ahead for the industry, for Tote as well. It's been a a great 30 years for me. I look forward to what the future holds as well for myself and the industry as well.
Tim, this is fantastic. I just, your energy is carrying through, and I share your view that the maritime industry has never been more relevant, whether we're talking about security or economy or U.S. industrial
supply
base.
Chain integrity.
Yes.
Yeah, little thing we saw the past few years,
Unfortunately, we learned a lot more about that than we ever wanted to.
So true.
This is great. Tim, anything else you want to say to our listeners? Anything we did not touch on or you want to put a finer point on before I let you get on to the rest of your day?
Yeah, no. Jennifer, I thank you again for, giving me the platform to have a chance to speak with you. I 30 years into the industry now, and it's been exciting. And I look forward to what the future holds for all of us. Exciting times ahead is all I can say. Thanks so much.
Well, I want to very much thank Tim Nolan for joining us and thank all of you for listening in to the American Maritime Podcast, powered by Big Wig Podcasts. I hope that you will take some time to share today's episode with friends and colleagues who might be interested in learning more. And I also invite you to take a minute to go to AmericanMaritimeVoices.com and sign up to be a voice on maritime issues. As Tim and I discussed, this is an industry that's never been more relevant. Your voice matters. Go to American Maritime Voices and check it out. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Carpenter, signing off.